Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Scotty Hertz, still tariff-free, complete free trade information here. No tax, no nothing. And it's absolutely free.
And if we do put a tariff on it, like maybe we'll do 25%.
Or a chocolate bar.
Or a 10%.
Settle for a chocolate bar.
Because that's how we make, you know, wide-sweeping foreign policies. We just, like, decide stuff at random because, you know, that's how we roll and stuff.
And we've just talked about the whole Trump topic in, like, 1 second. That's all you need to know. More to come.
Yeah.
Open Sources.
More to come. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca to click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we will talk about the Bloc Québécois. For the first time in a while, most of the caucus walked out on the leader, who's a little too committed to separatism, apparently. So when did the Bloc stop being about Quebec independence? And then our old friend Donald Trump suddenly decided to start a trade war last week because, you know, they're easy to win and stuff. Meanwhile, chaos continues because so many people want to be in the White House, apparently. And finally, we'll look at the riots in Hamilton on the weekend. Are the anarchists to blame? What about gentrification? And what are the warning signs that tensions were boiling over that the Hamilton police might have missed? But first, we're going to catch up with the gang running to take over the provincial PC party. We didn't talk about it last week, and...
Shocking.
Well, it was a little shocking, but it was a little...
Although you spoke to Vic Fedeli last week.
Well, that wasn't on the radio. That's a future thing. That will be in the future.
I thought I'd drop that in there. For the...
Yeah, I mean, as of the weekend, he won't be the leader anymore. But he was certainly in the news.
I mean, officially, but he's going to stay on until the election, though, right? Is that right?
Well, I imagine he'll stay on till the election, and when he wins, if he wins the election, he'll be back. He's not retiring.
He's the interim yet.
He's interim, and
he seems to have given the party a clean bill of health. I heard that.
Clean
bill of health.
Yeah.
And the PCs
He solved all their problems in 6 weeks, which is amazing, because nobody knew they had problems six weeks ago.
And they're bigger than any one individual. That was his other comment. It's like, we're not just about one guy, a.k.a. Patrick Brown. But, you know, they're...
Some guys are coming, yes. No, I mean, to his credit, I think he's put a rather stable, friendly face on what's been a very trying period. And getting to meet him personally for a couple of minutes last week... I found him personally very engaging, and so he did a good job.
Shortest tenure in history, probably, for that
gig. Oh, for that gig? Yeah, I mean, usually it's like a year. Like, you're interim leader for like a year before, because, you know, these things usually don't have to be crammed into 6 weeks because you need to get a new leader in place before
it's
the
like
provincial election.
Kim Campbell amount of leadership, right?
Oh, poor Kim
Campbell. Well, but then timeline-wise, I mean, yeah. jumping around here.
We're jumping around. That's okay. But I just mean we missed one of the big stories of the campaign, which was when Patrick Brown fled the campaign.
That's right. Yeah.
He paid into
he came back for 10 days.
Yeah, it was like a Scaramucci. That actually was a Scaramucci. He was in for 10 days. But
he pulled a Scaramucci.
He pulled a Scaramucci. He was
able
in for 10 days.
That one again. 10 days or less, we'll call us Scaramouche.
But I've been amazed how it kind of went back to normal after he left. It kind of became like a normal
reset
leader race again.
Yeah.
After he left, and I think it was like to everyone's relief that he did not stick around for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, even though this was obviously hastily put together and everything, it is playing out like a regular or regular-ish leadership race. The most I was getting off the media last week up to today was Doug Ford seemed to be the one making the headlines. That doesn't necessarily translate into he's going to be the leader, but as Doug Ford is saying this about abortion and young people.
Yeah.
And he was also making comments about I thought the funny one was looking for the gold in the Ring of Fire. I don't know if you meant gold in the figurative sense. There is no gold in Ring of Fire. It's actually, is it chromite? It's for stainless steel. Anyway, not to split hairs, but
doubt, Doug
he knows anything
knows
about mineralogy or whatever.
I'm sure somebody said, "Let's go and talk about the Ring of Fire." He's like, "Yeah, let's do that."
Yeah, because he was in Timmins, right? So he's been doing. They've all been on the trail here and there.
Well, not to dismiss it entirely, but I know Ring of Fire is a big deal to people in the north.
Oh, wait,
because Fedeli was from the north, and he talked about that when we had our little conversation at the OGRA.
Yeah, drop it in there.
Well, high speed. He didn't drop it so much as drop it from a B-52 several thousand miles up in the air.
Fell into the ring.
But yeah, and he's, you know, there were mayors there from the north too who are also looking for the province to support mineral extraction up there. And it hasn't been as the money hasn't been as loose as they would like. So I mean, it's not a it's not like a circus issue, like I think abortion and repealing sex ed has. And I'm sorry to see Christine Elliott get in on this, on this thing too. Like, yeah, let's have an open vote for abortion. It's like, no, weren't you not paying attention to the Stephen Harper years in power? Because that's I almost said the S word, but that's the stuff.
The stuff
that held him back. The social conservative stuff, and I saw a poll that said only 20% of Ontarians identify themselves as social conservatives. I'm actually surprised there's that many.
But how many of this is the thing? How many of the conservatives identify? It's obviously more. Like card-carrying conservatives that identify as social conservatives is obviously higher because they're all aiming for them these days. Greenwich Allen,
but
Doug Ford, and even as you said, Christine Elliott. The only one holding back is Carolyn Mulroney.
Carolyn Mulroney has like vanished from this race. So she had to bring her father out. Wheel him out, and then that's kind of surprising considering the hype she had going in. But going back to the social conservative thing, it's just, there are a higher percentage of social conservatives, but I mean, this is the stuff that will kill them in the general.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just the whiff of this, they're doing this to win a block of votes. But it's going to kill him in the general, just like it killed Stephen Harper in the general. It's what held him back through two minority governments for 5 years.
Until he sort of put the kibosh
on. And then he barely got a majority. And then it was stuff just like this. That guy in Kitchener, whose name I can't remember, I'm trying to think of it all day, who was like, "We've got to have a vote on abortion. Got to get abortion out of here."
That's all he talked about.
Right. And there was this guy, Charles McVetti, who is an evangelical leader in Toronto. And this is a direct quote about Doug Ford. "He's not our perfect candidate in every way, and he wouldn't be seen as social conservative, but he is someone who I believe fights for folks." Who does that sound like?
Folks? I don't know who it sounds like. I know exactly what it sounds like, but...
Right.
He's the Trump candidate of this campaign, if you want to put the T word onto it.
We know he's not, you know...
He's not a perfect shining
he's
example.
He's not godly.
Because he didn't know what the debate I saw. He didn't really know his faith. He said, "I am
neither
a Protestant."
Trump.
No, but he said he was a Protestant.
2 Corinthians. That's the whole thing.
You know, Catholic is one thing, but you know, Protestant has so many divisions. And he's like, "I'm a card carrying Protestant." That
but they know he's a straw man who will, you know, carry water because he knows that you know, having open debates about abortion in the legislature is going to honk off liberals and elites and all that.
Well, I think if Ford did get the gig, the conversation would immediately just turn to economics and it would kind of get sidelined. But
hopefully, but I mean, if he owes his election to some of these people,
they'll be like, "You owe us."
Yeah, and I mean, the Fords were not. When Rob was mayor, I mean, what was driving that whole subways thing in Scarborough? It was a block in Scarborough who were complaining about not being serviced by subways, even though almost all of them drive, and not wanting LRTs. They don't want to give up space on their precious road to LRTs. And
they don't like the LRTs.
So, I mean, the Fords are malleable, despite the, you know, their so-called populist ideology. That, you know, if a block leans on them, they will be... They will lean. They will be let lean on.
A little bit.
But yeah, I mean, but for Christine Elliott to get into this too, and I know she's like looking at the third leadership contest she's done in like a decade, and maybe she doesn't want to lose this one. Yeah, it just boggles my mind. It's like, this is the stuff that you guys lose the people, you know, in the general, because people don't want to talk about abortion. It's not a big, like all these people who are lining up in front of the general hospital here, And the General Hospital tells the paper, oh, we don't do abortions. But they're there every Wednesday having this, like, 40-day vigil. And it's like, well, there's nowhere in town. If you want to get an abortion, you can get an abortion, even though it's a right. What are we even arguing about?
They are, well, not arguing, but they are very confused, that gang. That's another story for another day, probably. But I think regardless of who wins, something that's definitely going to come up will be this whole business about the ballots not getting out to the people on time.
Yeah.
Their system is a bit...
wonky?
Well, not wonky. It's just it's something that would work all right on a longer timeline.
Yeah.
And when I read the description of how it works, where you send them your photo ID, then you wait for a code to come in the mail, not sent to you by a computer. I mean, you might as well have an election with paper ballots, right? Even if it takes that little bit extra time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the problem. When you move to the, you know, automatic systems, there are no perfect automatic voting systems, right? So there's going to be these issues. So, and Ford had brought it up. I think, who was it commented on Ford talking about it? Elliot said that Doug Ford was making problems where none exist. But it sounds like their voting system is a little bit problematic because there's people that are members. There's also a whole swath of members who aren't, let's say, technologically savvy without being ageist. But
old.
It's generally the, yeah. You did it
you
for me.
You can say old.
You did it for me. I'm right on the border of that, I think. But it is not the be-all and end-all yet. So, like I said, regardless of who wins, it's going to be, are you sure? There will be some question as to is the winner the winner. But it sounds like they extended the applications by one day. Mm-hmm. You can register by noon on March the 9th. And then... No, 7th, and then the voting is to noon on March the 9th, and we should know by the weekend, I guess, who the new leader is.
Well, that I think that's something they don't want to go into the next phase with, which is more sort of ballot voting issues hanging over their heads. So, I mean, it's not a small thing.
No, and it sounds
we
like...
We can mock the olds all we want for
no,
not
yeah,
being tech
but,
savvy.
Maybe but. They've got the right thing going on, you know, in terms of like a piece of paper. It's hard to mistake it. But And it sounds like their membership system was hacked last fall.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. I mean, if that was open, who knows what else is...
Well, yeah, I mean, the paradox is
through,
that,
right?
That there are some people who will go and log in and register, and they will get that register information confirmation back right away in their email, and then some people it's taking like a week, and people are having trouble loading like photo ID and all that. It's an inelegant system, and because they're trying to do it fast, you know, you can't have like a sort of the big gathering at a convention center, although they're kind of having that for the announcement.
There's
but,
millions of fraudulent ballots. Who knows? So
well, maybe that's the reason why they didn't want to do it either, because of all the ballot
millions,
stuff.
It'll be
things.
Like thousands. So just finally, prediction? You got anything? I got one.
All right.
I'm gonna go with Elliot. I think it's going to be Elliot.
Yeah.
That third time's the charm business, but also in terms of seasoning, I think she may be their best choice. Whether they will make that choice, I don't know, but it sounds like she's packing meetings left and right. And come out of the shadow there, of her husbands, and so
I think you're right. I think Hertz there
picks
was
Elliot.
Yeah, there was an article about how she's been actually campaigning harder this time, and not really taking anything for granted. So, I think that speaks to her level of commitment. I think Doug Ford is too big of a risk. You know, outside of the GTA, I question people's tolerance for him. Although the flip side is that there was a News Talk Dart poll that said 81% of people that responded were fed up with the Liberals. So, I mean, if Doug Ford did win, I'd be highly concerned people would, like the Trump factor all over again, people would, you know, just pull the proverbial lever for Ford because they hate Kathleen Wynne more.
No, I think if that happens, it'd be minority government. That's super speculation, right?
So. Super speculative. But yeah, I think it's Elliot, Tanya Allen, who's Tanya, rip out the wind turbines, Allen. Yeah. Coming from the people who are always complaining about the power plants, have fun.
Yeah, she got that shot in on I heard a bit of her on CBC. I find her very difficult to listen to at length. But manages to turn every single question into like the faith-based issue. Everything was like
And then Carolyn Mulroney, who started out with so much hype, so much energy, like just seemed to deflate so fast.
I think if she does become an MPP and gets a few seasons under her belt,
yeah,
there may be way more potential there.
Sure.
But right now, what was it the Conservatives say about Trudeau? Just not up for the job? I'm going to apply that to Mulroney. Very intelligent, you know.
She's undoubtedly accomplished, undoubtedly committed.
Truly bilingual.
Bilingual, of
so
course.
Lots of potential there, but it's not her gig this time.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
Could be, but no.
It was too soon. Too soon.
Yes.
So. I have no doubt that she's ambitious and she'll try again, but yeah, this just wasn't.
If she doesn't, you know, it was just all a fraud. But anyway.
Oh.
Well, she's running though, right?
She's got a candidacy. Yeah, she's got a riding. It's fine. She'll be
iron
fine.
In the fire there.
Caroline Mulroney will be fine. You know who might not be fine? Martine Ouellette.
Oh boy. Yes. Talk about the knives.
The leader, current leader of the Bloc Québécois, and show of hands, who knew Martine Ouellette was the leader of the Bloc Québécois?
I knew her face to see her, but it was like, oh yeah, yeah, the Bloc.
Because she does not have a seat in Parliament. She actually is sitting as she's not even sitting as a member of the Parti Québécois in Quebec. She's sitting in the National Assembly as an independent.
That is definitely unprecedented too, right? It's like, I'm in the provincial, but I'm the leader of the federal, and it's not really the same party, but it sort of is.
Well, she's not even part of the party. She's sitting as an independent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, red flag right there, because she's not sitting with the separatist party in the legislature, but that's fine. 7 of the 10 Bloc MPs walked out, apparently, because of hardliners like her in the party who are making it all about separatism, which is so weird, because, like, isn't that what the Bloc is about?
It used to be the thing.
Wasn't that the thing?
Yeah, the division, the line in the sand, seems to be between the people that are advocating for independence and those that want to, I think the exact quote was, defend Quebec's interests. This was in an open letter in Le Devoir.
Le Devoir.
That I think it was like 21 former MPs and Gilles Duceppe, remember that name? Gilles Duceppe is back. And they're pretty much, the short version was like, okay, Martine, it's time to go. so when you've got that.
I don't think it was that polite, but yeah.
When you got that coming, plus 7 out of 10, like if it was 2 or 3 rebels, you'd say, okay, but 7, that's fairly big. Yet somehow the party brass are backing her, eh? Like she got a nod of like, no, just stay in
there. It's fine. This is fine.
It's fine. It's okay. Complete chaos, but it's all right. Keep smiling. Do it Patrick Brown style. Bounce back and just smile all the time. And then I, in fact, did make a mistake and will be leaving. So I don't know. I don't know if she can survive this necessarily. There was other things going on behind the scenes too. Like you were saying she didn't have a seat, but she was asking for a salary for her federal work to the tune of $95,000 or something came up. Which is interesting, because you would think if that was the case, you'd probably step down. I know they do it all the time, like Jason Kenney having to step down from being a Fed or wait until the election was over and then going and to save Alberta. Like you can't have it. You cannot have it both ways until our system changed, which it won't, that if provincial and federal were a bit more intertwined, you could do it. But I don't think there's a remote possibility that she can keep this up.
Well, I mean, that's the bizarre part too. Jagmeet Singh was an MPP for Ontario, and then he became NDP leader and he resigned.
Yeah.
And now that's his full-time job, is being NDP leader. Jason Kenney's another good example. Brian Jean too, who was...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been Robert a few over the years. Jean Charest.
So it's like it almost kind of feels like she's half in it anyway.
Yeah.
Like she knows that it's... I don't know, like she's like the skipper of the SS
herself.
Hopeless
yeah.
cause, so yeah. she's got to have a backup. But it's weird to hear the Bloc Québécois talk about like all this separatism stuff. Like people need to calm
yeah.
down.
Yeah, could you throttle it back a little
like,
bit?
Just like take it easy. We're here to talk about Quebec issues. And it's like, really?
Yeah. Picture the rallies of the days of old with all the
Did Lucien Bouchard know?
Well, see, this is the thing, though, is that, yeah, because Bouchard's, I kind of did a bit of digging, sort of the history of the party, and Bouchard at one point said that, and I guess this was well into the tenure, saying that, you know, the block was never really meant to be a permanent fixture in Ottawa. But that was, yeah, it's going on, what, 30 years ago now? Yeah. So I guess you just get
definitely 25.
91, yeah. So. Yeah.
25 guess, since they became official opposition. That first
yeah, and that was, again, that was everybody, that sent a shudder through everybody. It's like, whoa, what happens? But still, never ever going to be, unless some sort of drawing of the lines and some weird minority collaboration, could have potentially been the government, but highly unlikely that anyone would work with them directly for that, for separation. Yeah, and it sounds like if the polls are anything to go by in Quebec, the support for independence is at a record low. So, you know, it's here they are. It kind of reminds me of the talk from the Social Conservatives in Ontario. It's the same thing in Quebec, but they're I would say their big small issue. The issue that everybody's talking about, but not really, is independence, because it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, we had those very narrow margin. It was 95. That was the great wave of the Bloc and the PQ. Well, PQ was 70s, too, right? Going back to Levesque times.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, those days are pretty much over. Like, I think there's no.
Well,
they're arguing for something that there's really no will to do it. So even so, if she stayed on, if she left the provincial job and was able to stay on, even though most of the rest of the Bloc have left. If you're just harping on this one point, nobody wants to hear it, and then you get the Liberals or the CAQ or whatever that part of the.
Well, what's crept into it now is the nationalism, and the, you know, no way to say it, but like the white supremacy of it now, that Quebec identity is tied to.
Yeah, and that's the fringe of this whole thing, that Lemieux or whatever, the wolf pack or whatever.
Yeah,
there is that anti-immigrant sentiment. Thankfully, not massive, but sadly still there and still a presence. And, you know, there is that undercurrent that's like, they insist that they're not racist. Another completely different story, but I don't, you know, the Bloc and the PQ obviously don't back them, but it may be that they, I don't know, they're sort of a weird subset of the whole thing, right?
Well, it's weird
Quebec
because...
Quebec for les Québécois.
Right, it's because we've...
There's your separatists there.
It feels like the situation has, like, made people realize that Bloc Québécois has issues, because the last leader, Mario Bolo, stepped down like a few months before the 2015 election, and they brought Gilles Doucet back, who then lost his bid for a seat. But I mean, that was the problem then, is that there was no energy under Bolo. And so they thought they'd bring back Doucet and get the old juices flowing again.
And they just kept showing that hairnet picture, right? And then that was it. You're doomed, Doucet.
But yeah, so this has been the story for the party for a long time. Mm. That, you know, what are they when they're not fighting for separatism? So I think there's what it sounds like. Is there a lot of people who are involved in the Bloc Québécois who are kind of fine with it being a protest party,
yeah,
and not really fighting for separatism, and, you know, just kind of standing up for Quebec values and being the people in Parliament who saying, like, hey, remember Quebec and je me souviens, that's fine. It sounds like the people who are at the head of the party still have the pipe dream very, very real in their heads. Maybe it's the old guard, but, you know... That
the Vive le Québec Libre.
Yeah, independence might still be a thing that happens one of these days, and it's not a civil war, but I mean, it seems like it's an insurmountable thing that, you know, I'm sure, having said all this, but by the time we come around to next fall, the Bloc will be running on full thrusters, and they'll probably win back, you know, 10 or 12 seats, and, you know, everything will be kind of quote unquote back to normal, but.
Yes, they're having a provincial election as well, right?
Yeah, there's a provincial. October. Yeah, yeah, true.
So that, yeah, there's the crossover between the PQ at the province and the BQ at the federal level. There are lots of overlap, and obviously the same Bloc, huh? No pun intended, of voters, right? So, but this is one of those remains to be seen. Who was Sylvain Gaudreau, an MP, was like, the situation is deplorable. This is somebody from inside the house, right? That it's like, déplorable.
They're so in the house.
Infighting will kill any party faster than anything.
Sure.
We saw it with reform and the conservatives all throughout the 90s, guaranteeing liberals. Gretchen, you know, prime minister of the 90s, because if you cannot get it together and become that united force, they did become and eventually win power. We know that the Bloc will obviously never, ever win power in Canada, but if they can win a sphere of influence, as they did. I mean, well, like, and I think something that has diminished things a bit as well at the federal level was when Harper came out and said, we were recognizing Quebec as a nation. Like, you're pretty...
Sure.
They've pretty much said, look, you know, that's one of the wishes.
Yeah.
They maintain a certain amount of...
It was probably one of the smartest things Harper ever did.
Yeah.
Even though it didn't help him politically at all.
And there's a certain amount of, you know, they have... The legal system's a little bit different, and they're, you know, written up differently in the Constitution. So it's not as if a lot has changed since the 70s, the Levesque days, where everyone chain smoked and really wanted independent Quebec, and almost, I wouldn't say almost led to their economic collapse, but companies fled then, right? So now it's please stay and give us jobs, right, or whatever. You just try and look out for Quebec's interests as opposed to... So they're going to be fighting that out for a while. And if we hear anything from the battlefront, we will let you know. But it sounds like it's just going
to
simmer, and probably come to a head in the provincial election in the fall.
Probably. I mean, there is an option they can have a vote of no confidence in Ouellette, but that seems to be easier said than done. Although they probably have the 25... I think it's like the executives from the riding associations. They might, you know, they could probably...
The coup.
Yeah, they could try it. But, I mean, that seems like an awful lot of hassle to go to. And, you know, maybe they don't care enough. Maybe just sitting there and being independent MPs and shaking their... I mean, because what were they doing as Bloc MPs anyway? They were doing the exact same thing. So maybe it just doesn't matter anyway.
Could be like the White Rose and they'll just get clobbered out of existence like they did in Alberta.
And then come back anyway.
Yeah.
Which is what happened to the Wild Rose. Yeah. The Wild Rose came back as official opposition and then merged with the Conservatives. Good times. Anyway, we'll see what happens. And we'll leave it there. And we're going to take a break now and play a bit of music and come right back with some more topics of conversation. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM. CFU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
That was Shred Kelly from their album Archipelago. The song was Stay Gold. And apologies to Rockside if you're listening for the banjo in there. But I love the banjo anyway.
It was one banjo at the top.
Yeah, but see, for some people, one banjo is one too many. It's also Banjo Fest this weekend, by the way, folks. Banjofest.ca for some on that. Shred Kelly are not part of that. However, they're playing the UC University Center here at the University of Guelph on Friday the 9th. Mm-hmm. At high noon, so come have lunch and come listen to Shred Kelly for free.
High noon.
Free show, high noon, UC Courtyard. I'm sure most of the listeners have been there at least once. You'll be able to find it. I'd recommend taking the bus, though, because parking is hell. How's that for a plug? Don't drive, because parking is hell.
Maybe they'll play Stay Gold, and yes. You know who also likes to stay gold?
All the gold. Yes.
Donald Trump.
Day shredded as well, but yeah.
Well, certainly his chief of staff's new nickname shredded could be cheese. Shred Kelly. Mm-hmm. By the time he's done, he'll be Shred Kelly. Anyway,
we're laughing at our own funny.
Yeah, totally. So last week, Donald Trump's like, you know what, let's have a trade war, because he was mad about, you know, Jared Kushner losing his security clearance and Hope Hicks leaving and stuff. I mean, that seems to be the narrative, but I mean, there is a flip side of it too, that Carl Icahn, who's, you know, one of the guys who kind of was pushing Trump to run, was very supportive of Trump's run, sold his interest in foreign steel the week before. Now, that's not to say this. That's not to say there's a conspiracy afoot, but you know,
it's a hell of a coincidence. Though,
it's a hell of a coincidence, but you know, we can have the two things at the same time, where it could very well have been talked about doing this tariff thing, which is why Trump suddenly decided to push the button on it, because in a fit of pique, it could have been something that was talked about at a White House meeting, and then when he was in a mood last week. Apparently Wilbur Ross and this other fellow, Peter Navarro, were like, how about a trade war? And he's like, yeah, sounds good.
Oh, so it did have sounds a good. Source then. This is the thing with Trump, is that he doesn't just, people think he comes up with these
no,
numbers.
No, he has no ideas.
Somebody, whoever has his ear at the time,
yeah,
is the idea that he rolls with. I thought maybe he heard somebody go 1, 2, 3, 4, I declare a thumb war. Misheard, thought it was trade war, and then picked some percentages out of the air.
He did pick percentages out of the air. 25% tariffs on steel, 10% on aluminum. Where do those numbers come from? He doesn't know. They just
no
sound
one seems
cool.
to know. I haven't seen one thing on where those numbers came from, but it's like we wanted to punish steel more. So somebody also wants to punish more. It seems like it wants to be China. He wants it to be China. Yeah. And he always says this thing, we have a trade deficit.
China.
We have a trade deficit with every country in the world. False. Completely false. Now, mind you.
Yeah, even Canada. Canada's ripping them off blind.
If you look at the stats in terms of the countries, it's about half. Like half of the countries have a trade surplus with the U.S. and half have a deficit with them. But he always says it's all of them. He just, there's no, nothing to back the numbers. He just all of them. It seems like we take 50% of their steel and they take 50% of ours. Now, it must be different grades and qualities and for purposes. It didn't really delve too much into that. But it's
but a lot of it's just like distance. Like Maine, Angus King was... who's the main senator, one of the senators from Maine. He was on Meet the Press, I think, but he was talking about how it's just easier to get steel in Maine from Canada than it is to get it from other places in the United States, where they have to travel
ship it down the water.
More. And, yeah. And I think that's true of a lot of places across the country. Mm-hmm. It's probably easier to get steel, especially with free trade in place, to get their steel or aluminum from Canada versus somewhere else in the United States. It's just economics. And, of course, if Trump knew anything about economics, which you think he would on this topic, because what are buildings made of?
Isn't he the main guy on economics?
Freaking! No? I hope he's not the main guy in economics.
I thought he was the guy. I'm the guy.
But I looked this up because I was like, wasn't there a thing with Trump and Chinese steel when he was running? And yeah, there is. The AFL-CIO, which is a union that represents a lot of steel workers, had a thing on their website that, you know, about how Trump habitually uses Chinese steel in his building and sometimes takes it from these like sort of... Because one of the things they're talking about is...
Sketchy.
Yeah, one of the things talking about like these proxy companies that, like, I guess launder Chinese steel. If you want to
retag it,
right? They take
designed
off
in the USA, manufactured.
They etch off the made in China thing and put made in Switzerland or whatever. But
the label was made in Switzerland.
That's right.
But the steel was made in China.
But apparently, Donald Trump has partaken in this. Getting steel, what he claims from not from China, but it's really China, and it was in two of his main projects, his hotel in Las Vegas and his hotel and tower in Chicago, both filled with Chinese steel. So this is another case of don't do what Donald Trump does, do what he says.
That doesn't surprise me because it must have been the best deal because it's all about the deal, right?
Well, that's hogwash.
What was his book, The Art of the Deal, right?
Which so he didn't write.
No. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying, when will I come to the defense of Trump? Never. So anyway, it's also been said, I guess Trudeau made some kind of phone call to him and said, hey, you know, it's a...
Trudeau freed the beast.
Yes.
I hear.
JT called DT Monday to register serious concerns about everything that was going on.
Yeah.
And it seems there's lots of concerns coming from inside the house. They had their moment there. Stock market drops, and a lot of conservatives, supposedly one, I'm saying conservatives, some Republican went on some kind of swear fest.
Mm.
Prompted expletives, the report said. So you can just picture this guy. And this is our own person. swearing his head off, but they are gently urging the deal with Trump. Here's the art of the deal with Trump. Is you make it sound like his idea is good. However, the word, the active word they seem to be using is tailor. We're hoping he will tailor his actions. We hope he tailors it towards this and
right.
then tailors it towards that. He dropped this right in the middle of round 7 of the NAFTA talks.
Yeah.
Not caring, right?
Nope.
Not even taking into consideration that that may be a factor because he does not care.
And doesn't know.
And doesn't know. And whoever put it in his ear also doesn't care.
That well again
just
that
like,
was
boom here you go
that was
the
Wilbur Ross
in the middle of the room boom
that was right? Wilbur Ross
yeah.
who's a Goldman Sachs billionaire
yeah
but and then
it's
goes on
t-
and then goes on TV and it's like this is a Campbell soup can it's got
2.6
cents of aluminum in it it's only gonna go up 0.6 of a cent you can't afford 0.6 of a cent American consumer and it's like.
I've never heard that guy, but that was fantastic.
Yeah. I was like, get off TV with this, because that's not what
Gomer.
We're right. It's yeah, that's not what we're talking about here. It's not about the soup cans and the pop cans. It's about the buildings and the cars and the aerospace and the roads.
The bigger picture.
The bigger picture.
Yeah.
Right?
But this is the problem is that they go all the time to these guys, purported experts or people in the industry. Another one is Zekelman. I've never heard of this Zekelman guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Zekelman Industries. He's like, yeah.
Zekelman Industries.
It sounds like something out of the movie.
Sounds like a Seinfeld alias.
It was one of those, they make steel tube, and I think they're the number one producer in North America, and they've got 14 companies in the U.S. and one in Canada. And this guy, by some, I think, accident of history, is Canadian because... Steel tube, they've acquired a bunch of companies, pretty much all of them. And he's like, oh, it should be higher. But they've only got one location in Canada, and they probably don't care where that location disappears. There's another company down that way, in Windsor Way, I believe, RJ Steel, smaller steel company. They're like, prepare for the job losses. They're coming. So it's like the absolute opposite, but this is like a Canadian-based firm.
Yeah, but he's going to pay $1,000 bonus to his workers.
So yeah, it's like...
Then
they're gone.
Yeah.
Here's your bonus. Now get your stuff.
But the thing that vexes me is it's aimed at China.
But so aim it at China, right? If that's your problem.
Well, I mean, there is a legitimate problem with China dumping cheap steel, and using proxies to move cheap steel.
Because Trump Industries.
Yeah. I mean, that's a legitimate problem. But this is a 25% and 10%. Blanket charge when the top 10 importers of steel are not like China is not in the top 10. Number one is Canada. I think number two is Brazil. And then the rest of the eight is Mexico's in the top 10 too. But then the rest are all NATO allies. So you're basically shooting all your allies in the foot in order to get to China. And again, this is supposed to be Trump's business. Like, what are his buildings made of? Steel. Doesn't he know about steel? No, because he doesn't know anything about anything to do with his business. And yeah, this is, again, I was watching the news before coming down here, and they're talking about like, oh yeah, they're just like, maybe they'll go back and rectify this, you know, once he's done with his tantrum. I'm like, first of all, he's a 72-year-old man. He's almost 72 years old having a tantrum. Second of all, he's president of the United States. Third of all, you have the staff of the president of the United States acquiescing to his tantrum, which causes gross economic harm and uncertainty in the markets. Four, on top of all that, he's the great businessman deal maker that – and that's why part of the reason why he was elected. And it's like, do you not see the levels of doublespeak and hypocrisy? And then on top of all that, you have Paul Ryan come out and go, oh, I wish there was something I could do. It's like, I've tried nothing and I'm all
My
out of ideas.
Tied,
it's like, I know, you're completely powerless, Paul Ryan. You're only the Speaker of the House of the United States of America. What can you possibly do third in line for the presidency, you spineless?
Yeah, wasn't Wikipedia altered to have him in with spineless animals? Did you hear
that? Maybe.
It was like spineless things and then Paul Ryan and then no spines.
But yeah.
I will reserve judgment on Paul Ryan. But yeah, Trump's comment, I'm not sure if it was on Twitter or they were talking to him. He's like, the trade war hurts them, not us. Though that's his mentality. It's like this trade war that hasn't happened yet. And have I got it right? Like, isn't this like a violation of NAFTA?
Sure.
Or can anybody just, you know, anytime there's a tariff slapped on something, softwood lumber, famously. Back
this is probably a violation of any number of trade agreements.
Yeah, maybe it's a violation of all of them. But they're all bad deals, so I'm going to make it worse. I'm going to make the bad deal worse.
That's, yeah, when he was praising Xi the other day, and he was like, I told Xi, I don't blame you. It's like all our leaders made terrible deals. And it's like, well, you know what? You didn't even write the art of the deal, so yeah. What do you know?
So over in the corner, the grenade's exploding, and he's like, ah, that Alec Baldwin, what a terrible actor.
No, Alex Baldwin.
Alex. Alexei Baldwin.
He was mad at Alex Baldwin.
He's a Russian agent.
Who's a Baldwin brother I am not familiar with.
Alexei.
And you'd think he'd basically, you'd think if some...
He's like, bring back Daryl Hammond. He's better.
That was the most shocking thing of all. It's like
everything's exploding in the background. He's like, oh, Daryl Hammond.
I think I'd prefer it if Daryl Hammond played me in those Saturday Night Live sketches that I get so mad about, and then I demand equal time, which he did actually do once. He demanded equal time from Saturday Night Live since they make fun of him on the show. Like, what? Like,
is it Daryl Hammond's the announcer now? Isn't he Don Parter's replacement? Yeah, like Daryl Hammond does that. It's Saturday Night Live.
I think, yeah, you're right.
It's open sources Guelph.
You're right.
So we've gone, well, of course we go absurd to ridiculous with Trump. It can't be helped. This serious thing is like tariffs.
Well,
and
we didn't talk about
Saturday Night Live.
Right, and we didn't talk about how Gary Cohn left apparently because of this. His economic advisor, another Goldman.
I very quickly on Twitter saw somebody had a PowerPoint list of everybody that's left so far.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be record-breaking.
40% turnover.
40% turnover within just over a
year. 13 months.
It's got to be a record.
Oh, it's completely
It's never happened. It's unprecedented. So we are living...
I don't think there was even 40% turnover in the White House in White House Down. I don't think there was even 40% turnover there.
We've lost radio communication. It's like, oh, we'll stick it out. It's okay. Is there coffee? We'll stay. Yeah.
Olympus has fallen probably at 40%, but that was R-rated. Anyway.
Yeah, it catches up on my disaster flicks. Yeah.
They're not bad. I think I have them both actually on DVD. Getting off topic.
Yes.
We'll save that for end credits. Hamilton, Ontario, not the Hamilton musical you may be familiar with, but...
Or Hamilton, UK. Home of my family. But anyway.
All right. Good to know. Little Scotty Hertz trivia. They had a bit of a riot there on the weekend. About 30 people dressed in black, kind of taking their cues from some of these G20 protesters of the past. Went up and down southeastern neighborhood of Hamilton, primarily Lock Street, where there's been a lot of gentrification, a lot of small businesses, a lot of high-end boutiques moving in, and speaking of Freed the Beast, threw rocks, set off fireworks, played loud music, harassed shopkeeps, stole sandwich boards. That was the video that slayed me, was somebody was filming from inside one of the stores, and one of the rioters comes over and just steals the sandwich board. It's...
like it was a drunken football riot of some kind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Tactics are universal in some ways. $100,000 in damage. That's a lot of glass. Now, mind you, that glass is...
glass is expensive.
Especially that type of glass. Yeah, plus, yeah. And all the other cleanup and all of that stuff.
So well, that's... Yeah.
That's like a catastrophic fire level of damage. So, yeah, this... has played out over the course of the week, and there was this weird off the top, like, where were the police? And they had a meeting on Tuesday night with the chief of police, Eric Gert, about, so where were you guys when this happened? So it sounded like a couple of cops showed up, and then they called for backup, but the backup kind of, there's a picture, that picture of all the police standing there is them hanging back. And I guess all this happened so fast, it doesn't take very long to run along and smash a bunch of windows, as we saw in the G20 as well. It's like you can do a lot of damage. I take it with the proper tools when the ungovernables are on the loose.
Well, they said they had a banner that said, we are ungovernable. We don't know if they are the ungovernables.
Well, it turns out the ungovernables, the first thing I Googled, there's like a Mexican pro wrestling outfit.
Oh, really?
In the Lucha Libre vein with the masks on. I don't know. I don't think there's a link between them and...
I wouldn't think so.
There is no link between Mexico.
There was a blog post on something called North Shore Counter Info, where it was apparently someone who took part in in that who wrote it. That's not confirmed, though. And they actually said, like, the reason they didn't, like, smash the Starbucks is because it was, like, too far north. I guess there were some complaints about, like, why are you targeting, you know, small businesses?
And that's interesting. People are like, come on, why didn't you get the Starbucks? Like,
the McDonald's was unscathed.
It's like, okay, if you guys are going to do this, why didn't you go further up the road?
Nobody attacked the TD Canada Trust.
No.
That's bizarre. Yeah, it was a bizarre argument.
I read that this morning, and it sounds pretty legit just by the way that it's written. It doesn't have any, like, big rhetoric. It sounds like a sort of first-person account of what happened. And if for some reason, that's what it took for the police to create an official link. I think once it happened and it became clear that the anarchist book sale was in the neighborhood at a school nearby, it's like, I think a lot of people immediately drew the link, maybe – rightly or wrongly, but it's, you know, it's not safe to judge because it, you know, it starts off that there's nothing proven, but it's a heck of a coincidence, right?
I mean,
and then the police are like, yes, there is an official link between the anarchists,
which they haven't released. I want to add that they haven't released what the official link is. They just said there's a link.
No, they
they didn't say what the link is. Whether that was someone who was, like, in the neighborhood or went to the book fair just to check it out,
or somebody has rolled. And of course, that school has a bunch of cameras, so you might have your mask on the
but
street.
But if I may.
Yeah, yeah.
The Anarchist Book Fair, and this comes from the school board itself, the Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board, said that the group has rented that space before for their book fair.
Problem-free.
And they
probably,
are in
right?
good standing.
Sure.
So all of a sudden they decide to, like, hold a riot, like, as like, kind of like an adjoining event. This is like when there are legitimate protesters out, like, protesting the G20, and they get rounded up with all the black boot people. Or
the G20 was unprecedented.
Right.
I narrowly escaped the dragnet.
I mean, remember that.
I was just walking around.
I mean, remember that. Like, there were a lot of people who were, like, legitimate protesters who were organizing, who were kind of entrapped.
Steve Paikin got hauled in. Like, they were hauling people in left.
Right.
You know, you're done. You're done, too.
But, I mean, there were people here in Guelph who were like, basically entrapped into into planning things that they probably weren't
planning
originally.
Somebody who did absolutely nothing at all went to jail.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and it's the same thing with, like, going to head shops and raiding them because they might be a front for how many of these head shops are fronts for organized crime and all that?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they're painting with the same brush. And I love Joe Warmington, the scribbler himself.
Trust Joe. Yeah.
You know, going to the anarchist, like, there's an anarchist book fair nearby. I'm going to check this out and I'm going to blow this thing wide open. And of course, you know,
would
the
you
anarchist.
Like a book? Yeah.
And I saw this on CTV too. And of course, the anarchist is like, no, we're not going to make a statement to the press. No, we're not going to talk to you because it was very obvious from the start. The agenda was to tie the book fair to this mischief making and this inappropriate behavior.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's anarchists.
It's the equivalent of no comment too, though, right? It's just.
Well, I think.
It's a bit of an ambush when they show up and say, so what do you know about this? We're like, no, we're not going to talk.
I probably
would do the same thing.
Yeah. No, I was going to say the media was all too willing to draw the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that maybe somebody from the book fair wasn't involved. Again, the Hamilton police said, oh, we found a leak. A link. They're not saying what the link is. I just find it utterly suspicious that. It's also a very tunnel vision thing. Like, we have quote unquote anarchists who are calling themselves ungovernable. Let's stop at the anarchist book fair instead of just, like, because I think the vast majority of people who stop by the anarchist book fair, and I can't imagine they were there by the hundreds, are people who are just sort of, like, politically active and politically interested and, in an intellectual way, interested in anarchy. They're not suiting up and smashing windows and things.
I saw a picture of the table of books, and I'm like, okay, I've read at least three or four of those. I didn't.
You were in on it!
Exactly, I was in on it. allegedly. But I don't think I've been to an anarchist book fair. It was just like books on a table, man. And I know they were having a little mini conferences as well there as well. And fair enough. Well, within your rights to do that. It's not as if. Shouldn't be,
I just come back to the fact the school board. It's the school board. It's not, something like OPIRG, which has, like, a radical background. It's a freaking school board. The school board came out and issued a statement and said we have dealt with them before, and we have rented space to them before. They are in good standing.
But, and OPERC are a presence on campus here, and they hold their fair here every year as well, and it's been trouble-free as far as I know. I went to one, and good speakers. That's a few years ago. But something weird has happened, too. And well, in some ways, this has brought gentrification to the fore. It's on the front page, and if that was the goal, then it's happened. At what cost? $100,000, I guess, and more probably. It sounds like the community in that area are rallying behind them. It would seem that Guillermo del Toro films so many movies in Canada, and he loves Hamilton, and he loves Toronto. That donut store was called Monster Donut, or Donut Monster, is like one of his favorite places to get a donut. So that's a little bit of an aside, but I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. But it's
he's probably eaten a few donuts in his time.
I think so. He's right, and it's pitted the two neighborhoods. There's Barton Street in Hamilton. If you know Hamilton, Barton Street is kind of a main east west, and then Lock Street's north south, and they're both kind of gentrifying. And it seems a lot was happening on Barton Street last summer in terms of random acts of vandalism. Stickering and doors filled with foam and stuff. Lots of complaints made. But yet nothing really happened, and yet now, boom, this happens, and Lock Street is getting all of the attention. So, and this is one of those things, too, as to whether anyone will actually be rounded up. In the case of, let's say, comparing the G20, which was also a big window-smashing fest, they just rounded everybody up. In this case, there really is nobody to round up directly, and I think they're going to spend a lot of time going through video and saying, oh, there's that pair of shoes. They're over here, That kind
well,
of
apparently,
how far are they going to pick this apart, really?
Apparently, they wore like other clothes underneath the black clothes, because apparently the police found like piles of black clothes in different yards. So they just kind of
as
blended
said
into the
media,
crowd.
Black block style tactics.
Black
is
block,
exactly
what
happened.
I do the gentrification. I found the discussion I found interesting, because part of that thing on the North Shore counter info that. People are getting richer because their lives are getting worse. Rents are going up. Rich people move in and then sell luxury goods while people work for them for minimum wage. And then the police surveillance comes in to protect the investment. And it's
that, to me, my opinion, that's a fairly accurate statement.
Yeah.
But it's
it
depends on your approach to how do you address these issues. Obviously, it is the kind of thing now that's going to be addressed right away. Will it stop the tide of gentrification? I don't think so. But if it's at least back on the radar, I don't know what kind of talks it would take to say, yes, we need more affordable housing in Hamilton because that pool of housing is getting consumed by gentrification. Everybody's property values, and we've seen it in Guelph here too, the property values go up. Certain people, lots of certain people can't afford to live there. So what do you do? Where do they go? Do you move on to the next town? Should be able to live in the home? All of these issues, right?
Right, that's the next phase of this, which I think is getting swallowed up by just the outrage about the black bloc tactics and the people who did this. Is just that, there are legitimate issues and legitimate concerns, and that, it could be said that there are people in these areas, being priced out of their homes and their neighborhoods who might be fed up, and not necessarily people who would suit up and do these things, but people who may look at what they did and go,
I'm why it happened, but wouldn't necessarily endorse. And obviously, should probably add that I will speak for myself, I suppose, but neither one of us would endorse doing this, just to be clear, even though...
No, you can speak for me, too.
Okay. Open Sources comes out against the smashy, however...
Yeah, put down your tweets.
Understand why it happened.
Put down your tweets. We're fine.
Yeah. What was it Kathleen Wynne said? We were just talking about Trump. She said, anything that comes out of the White House is suspect. And I think she was sort of implying that, it's just comes out of there in a tweet and we don't know what to expect.
That's a can of worms we don't want to open.
Yeah. So get off the social media and get out and become a community
organizer.
Get
some fresh air.
Yeah. Go to City Hall and watch Adam tweet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's good watching. Anyway. that's it for this week. We're going to have some people coming in soon. We are going to have Mike Schreiner by at some point to talk about the Fair Vote campaign and make sure he gets to take part in the leaders' debate. And I can confirm Mayor Cam Guthrie will be back for a Q&A in April.
Right on.
And we'll have more details about that in the near future. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, you can re-listen to us on the Guelph Podcast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. The blog is spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And DJ Sounds Good to Me is up next here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. And we'll see you then.